absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to show number 66 of Absolutely Intercultural. My name's Anne Fox, and this show is coming to you from Denmark, land of the Vikings. And in fact, today the show is full of premeditated violence. Deeply felt emotions. Beautiful craftsmanship and horsemanship.
It's sort of a demonstration.
A part of this setup.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here. And
yes, you're embroidering.
Yes.
And bell ringing.
Bell thing and this. Mm. When they sing with it and they bang it on the floor. Bang, bang, bang.
Okay.
That's a very normal thing.
But we're going to the Mosegar Viking Moot, a gathering of people from all over the world who just want to be Vikings. The Danes and Scandinavians in general are famous for their Viking past, and certainly, ever since I arrived in Denmark, I have been aware of this proud Viking history and how much it features even now. I remember being in the Aarhus tourist office in January one year and overhearing one of the staff on the phone to a foreigner, because she was speaking in English. "Of course I go swimming in the sea at this time of the year," she was saying. "I'm a Viking." It was tongue-in-cheek, but the Viking heritage is never far away. And every year, at the end of July, just south of Aarhus, the Vikings meet to show off their horsemanship, their handicrafts, and their fighting skills for a week. People live as Vikings, more or less, for that time, and at the weekend the public are invited to join in. Since I've been enjoying this for many years, I decided that this year I would be brave and approach some of these warriors, feisty women, and well-travelled minstrels to try and find out what makes ordinary people try to step into such a faraway culture so completely. And then I spoke to Peter Hambro Mikkelsen at the museum to get some background to the event. And only then did I find out how special the Mosegar Moot really is. Let's go absolutely historical.
Well, my name is Peter Hambro Mikkelsen. And usually I am heading the environmental and conservation department here at Mosegar Museum. But in the summertime, for one week, I'm in charge of the Viking Moot, which we have here.
This Viking festival that you have, or Viking Moot, to give it its proper traditional name, it's a recreation in many aspects of Viking culture.
Yes, that's correct. It started, in fact, all these festivals you see with Viking things around the globe, because they're even doing it in Australia. It all started here in Mosgård 33 years ago. And that's why we are sort of the mother of all Viking festivals, as we've been called in a Viking newspaper. So we have a large group of people who wants to come here, many more than there are room for. For instance, last year, or this summer it was, we had 11 Vikings from Australia who flew in to participate for one week here.
How close do you think that these people can get to the real authentic Viking culture?
They can get close, but not that close, because we cannot copy the mindset which the Vikings had. We know too much today. The Vikings lived in a different world. They had a quite different perception of death, of life, of obligations, of work, of everything, fighting also. And when we try to recreate it today, we are limited by our more recent knowledge about the same things.
Can you give an example of how knowledge gets in the way of being a Viking?
Well, the knowledge of coffee can be a problem in being a proper Viking, can't it? So it functions this way, that the most of them arrive on the Monday, and then they have the whole week to sort of train and be together and involve the things they like to do. And then in the weekend, when it's open for audience, we stow away our coffee pot and take on all the real clothes and do it like that. It is a mix, and it will always be a mix. But we can try to do it as perfect as possible. And I must tell you, when we have this on these evenings before the festival as such starts, when we are 200 or 300 people together, all wearing Viking clothes and having a beer or even three and having a really, really good time. It's a marvelous experience to be out in open air the whole day and making food over fireplaces and things like that. And as you know, because you've been here, the festival is situated about 100 meters from the sea. Take a dip in the sea, you can go a walk in the woods. It's sort of out of time and space. it's really an experience being here. That's what I think the Vikings who come here like. We have Vikings from Russia, Poland, England, France, not many, but a few. Belgium, Holland, lots of people from Germany, Norway, Sweden, and of course the odd Australian and the Americans who flew in every year to participate in this.
What is it about the Viking era which attracts people?
I think it's an era for many people who is filled with adventure. And also it's a bit, let's just say, uncivilized. Sometimes it's nice not to be too civilized. And we also have to differentiate between the three groups of people who are here, because we have the warriors, and then we have the horse people, or the cavalry, and then we have the traders. The warriors primarily want to fight, and they have a very strong feeling of group and very command structure, because you have to trust each other and you have to be careful in these battles so you do not hurt your opponent. After each of these battles, all meet in one big group, and there's some guys standing in the middle, and all problems are solved immediately, because you cannot have problems between people who go at each other. Even though the weapons are not sharp and not pointed, you can really get hurt. So this is really good, and you have to have Russians working together with the Englishmen and with the Danes and so on. And then the cavalry is more traditional. They are from people around here. They're local people who have their Icelandic horses. And to them, this Viking is a bit more like a vacation. They come here once a year. The warriors, they go every weekend all over Europe. And the tradesmen also go once a week all over Europe, and Northern Europe. And some of them do it more for trading. And some of them do it for the handcrafts. It's not easy just to say why people do it. There can be a lot of different reasons for it.
We'll be hearing more from Peter later on, but now let's hear from some of the enthusiasts who live as Vikings. First, I talked to Greta, a conscientious Viking woman who makes all her own clothes and who comes to Morsegård with her husband, who is a horseman, as you will hear. So now it's time to go absolutely homemade.
My name is Greta.
And you're here at the Viking Festival. Do you go to lots of Viking festivals?
Only two.
Two.
But I have been here for 22 years.
So the question is, why do you do it?
Because I love it. It's a kind of freedom, it's a kind of joy, and you'll never be too old to play. And I'm very interested in history, so this thing together.
Yeah, and do you come with your family?
Yes. Years ago I had my daughter with me. Now it's only my husband and me is here. And it's because of the horse.
Okay.
We are here because it's a Viking's horse.
Yes, I've just seen the display of what they can do.
But I'm the lady of the house.
Yeah, it's very beautiful.
And this one.
Oh, the beads mean that you're very well off.
Yes.
Yeah. So how authentic is all this around you here, the tent, the tools and so on?
You see the tent?
Yes.
It's been found in Oslo.
Yeah.
It's Oseberg ship.
Okay.
It was a queen ship.
Yeah.
And there we found this one. You can see the up there.
Oh, the decoration at the top.
Yes, the decoration at the top. And this one is from a bed.
Okay, so the chair
we only had made
on
a chair.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So you're using patterns that you find in museums?
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
And we read a lot in books, and we ask people at the museum.
Yeah. So what's so attractive about doing this at the weekend?
We came here Monday, and the whole week we have enjoyed ourselves.
Yeah.
And be together with our friends.
Yeah.
Talk and speak and play and sing.
Yeah.
And this is here the market is.
Mm.
And we are a part of this. But the whole week we have holiday.
Mm, yes.
Yeah, yeah, we have holiday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Saturday and Sunday we are a part of this tableau. What do you call it? Yes.
Yeah. It's sort of a demonstration.
A part of this setup.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm sitting here. And
yes, you're embroidering.
Yes, by Goethe.
Oh, you're Harold from the Bayer Tapestry.
Yeah, Bayer
yes.
Tapestry. Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's
yes.
Harold with fork and horse, and when he was on his way from England to Normandy.
Normandy. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can I ask you, the clothes? Do you make them, or do you get them from craftsmen around here? Or
his clothes?
No, your clothes.
My clothes. I make them myself.
You make them yourself. I'm trying to find out what percentage of Viking you are, you see. Do you eat Viking food?
Yes, we make our food from the fire.
Okay.
What we can make at the fire.
Yeah.
Or but you can make everything.
So it's a very varied diet.
Yes.
Okay. So finally, can I ask you, what's so attractive about being a Viking, say, for example, instead of a Stone Age person or from being a 17th century person?
Because in the Viking time, the Danes were conquerors all over in the world.
Of course, yes.
And there was a lot of rich people, and therefore the culture and the things we made are very, very beautiful. I think it's because of that.
As I was wandering around the encampment, buying pancakes and roasted meat and getting smoke in my eyes, my gaze was inexorably drawn to a very exotic-looking person, even by Viking standards. This turned out to be the alter ego Ibn Fadhlan. Let's go absolutely exotic.
In the Viking festival, I'm called Ibn Fadhlan. It's from Iraq. And the guy Ibn Fadhlan, he has mentioned he was a poet. And he had a relationship to one of the ministers of the Khalifa, the Abbasid Khalifa there. It was around a little before the 900.
Yeah.
Today we know about the Vikings' lifestyle, how it is in every matter of life. It's of their food, how their appearance were, how their war techniques, how their building techniques, how their shipping and, and everything. And the intimate thing in the house to be with a Viking girl. He also mentioned that.
So what attracts you about the Viking way of life?
Well, the thing is, because my father, he's Danish, and my mother's from Iraq.
Yeah.
So I got the two bloods in me.
Yeah.
So I've been here before coming to the Viking markets. I was a lot going to the medieval markets.
Yeah.
Because that's also something interesting. And I saw the Vikings there and said, well, the Vikings, why not? Because it was just about the time when the film 13th Warrior came about. I said, why not? Because I got these two bloods in me and there's nobody else doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked them in Ribe at the time. I said, I'd like to join your market if it's possible. He said, yeah, sure. Send your letter in and say what you're trading with or what your handwork or what you're working with. I said, I haven't got anything, but I have a picture of me. So show them a picture like this. No discussion. Next year you are with us. And I've been steady with them since.
So do you go to a lot of these Viking festivals?
Yes, so as much as I can.
Yeah?
Because sometimes, they're, as usual, always they happen 2-3 markets the same weekend. So it's a bit difficult to go all of them at the same time.
And while you're at the festival, you live as a Viking, do you? Or do you stay in a hotel?
No, I live in the tent. I haven't got my own tent, but sometimes I can rent or borrow or loan one of their tents.
Mm.
And I live in it. It's a bit cold sometimes at night, especially when I go out in the middle of the night for call of nature. You see everything is white there. That's not the salt or the rain, it's the frost.
Yeah.
So you feel it at night. So, but it's interesting to live in this way.
Yeah.
You don't have your watches, you haven't got your mobile and whatever modern things. So you're living like they did that time.
Yeah.
And if you have a problem or something, you want to find a solution out of it. You have to think, how did it think that time?
Yeah.
Like you say, okay, I'm in this situation now. All the modern high-tech thing, forget about it. what happened with me now? What, how can you use these things? For example, when I'm coming to the marketplaces, I'm normally overnighting there. Stay overnight with. I'll have my things with me. It's just normally spices. It's the old world spices that they used to trade with the Arab world that time. The ones that's coming from the Silk Road.
Yeah.
So it's all the spices what they use today, but people normally have it as powder. So they don't know how the real thing looks, the whole spice.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm explaining them, and I'm informative, kind of representing the Muslim culture at the time.
Yeah.
Although I'm not a Muslim, but I've been brought up half of my life in that world.
Yeah.
So I know a lot about it. So.
What's the significance of the bells?
The bells is here in up in the north. They have something called, I don't know what it's called in English. It's kind of a stick where they have a music instrument in it, a drum and a bell thing, and this when they sing with it and they bang it on the floor, bang bang bang.
Okay.
That's very normal thing. But as I'm dressed, I'm a wandering person, a traveler.
Yeah.
So this is my companion in traveling, and the bells are in a way protection from the evil eye. That's why the same with the mirrors. Like maybe you've heard about the blue stone or the blue eye.
Mm.
It's also protection of the evil eye. They're very much used in Turkey and Greece in these areas.
Yeah. Mm.
So this the bell thing is just like delusion in them. That they'll look at the bell instead of looking at me. They say, "What's that noise?"
Because
it's more effective.
Yeah.
And when I'm walking around, that people they will hear the bells. So they just kind of give them a sign that I'm coming.
Yeah.
But just turn around and go. Because as you can see, I look very different than normal people.
Yes, yes.
When they see a Viking coming there, oh, it's a Viking. But when they see me coming there, what happened there? So that's kind of giving a warning. Here I'm coming. Here I'm coming. Yeah. Take it easy.
So where have you got all your information from? Is it you read a lot, or you talk to other people, or what?
Yeah, it's reading and seeing documentaries and talking to people. My normal job is a translator.
Ah, okay.
So I'm being paid for speaking in the normal daily life.
Yeah.
Because like if you go to medieval times, they're speaking about the Crusaders. Here we always hear from the Christian side or the Western side that they went down to free the Holy Lands. But there we hear a completely different story, that they're protecting the Holy Lands from the invaders.
So
they rose their leaders, while here they say they are bandits and the pirates and whatever. But they're the opposite way around. That the heroes here are pirates and bandits and whatever, criminals and terrorists. But there they see their own as heroes.
That's
like
always,
Saladin, for example.
Yeah.
He's a very big hero in the Muslim world.
Yeah.
While in the Western, they see him as hard not to crack, because he's always standing in the way for them.
Yeah, that's right.
But the films that came, the latest film, the Kingdom of Heaven, I think it's one of the first time that they give a fair part of the treatment for the Saladin, to show how the Muslims were. They weren't as savage and barbaric like the show. They were very hospitable and very merciful in the time of need.
Yeah.
That's not many films that show. They always show, they're coming here and massacring everybody, making mincemeat out of them.
Yeah.
Then I could put it off no longer. I simply had to gather all my courage and nail down one of the warriors to find out what made them come from all over Europe and beyond to fight. I'd always been intrigued by the number of English voices I'd heard on the battlefield over the years, so I made sure that it was a Briton that I talked with when I went absolutely violent.
My name is Ian Judd, or otherwise known as Gunner.
So what brings you all the way from England here?
A very good party.
Yeah?
With lots and lots of my very good friends that I only see 2-3 times a year when I come over to fight. I've been coming over here now for about 18 years.
What gave you the idea of doing this?
We started coming over and fighting for the museum here at Mosgoor with a guy called Frank the Hammer.
Yeah.
And he came over and did a small show, and then there was about 20 guys from England that came over and did it.
Yeah.
Because we do Viking reenactment in England. And he came over to fight for the museum and put on a bit of a display. And then the next year it was 30 people, and the next year it was 40 people. And then the Danes started. We started to train the Danes to fight, and then the Swedes joined in, and then the whole thing just got bigger and bigger and bigger. Not me personally,
no.
But the whole Viking reenactment thing kind of started in England, and then we came over here and did a bit, and it's kind of mushroomed from there.
Yeah, I noticed there's a big complicated timetable up, so you take this seriously and you do a lot of training.
Yeah, a lot of training.
Yeah,
it's, if we didn't do as much training as we do, it could be quite dangerous.
Yeah,
because you've got big guys swinging metal weapons about.
Are there any rules for when you're dead? Or
yes.
Yeah, there are. Okay.
You have to actually hit someone in the target zone.
Yeah.
Target zones are upper torso and legs down to just above your knees.
Yeah.
Not allowed to hit in the head. Not allowed to hit the arms.
Yeah.
Or below the knees.
And is this, how authentic is it? I mean, in what way is it authentic?
Don't know.
Or is it just a jolly good ruck?
It's just jolly good ruck, really.
Yeah.
There are some other styles that are being developed that are far more realistic, because they take more armour, more hit areas, so
yeah.
they take the arms so that and the lower legs and the head if they wear the correct armour and stuff. Even fencing masks now, some of them are wearing for strikes to the face and stuff. So that's much more authentic. But what we do is kind of more of a sport, I would say.
Yeah.
And it is bloody good ruck.
Right.
Yeah.
So you do it for fun?
Yes.
Yes. So what, you have to do training back home?
Oh yeah. We train at least twice a week back home.
How do you train?
Get all of us together in a hall, and we train. Then we train formations and battle tactics as well. I don't know if you can see it when it's out there, but there is quite a bit of that going on.
Yeah.
So on all that we train.
So are you here for the whole week?
I've been here. I was here the weekend before at Trelleborg.
Yeah.
And then we come on to here.
Yeah. And so is this a sort of Viking camp?
No, this is a Viking camp.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, there's no one normally here for the rest of the year. And we arrive, and the horse people as well.
Yeah.
I think the horse people were here originally, even before the Vikings were. They had an Icelandic horse show, and then we did a bit in between.
Yeah.
So I think they originally started it all.
What about
for the camps here?
Eating and stuff. I mean, do you go the whole Vikings thing, or do you just have packet food or something?
No. So it's definitely a mix and match. You walk around, you'll see most people cooking over an open fire.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But you know, we don't go the whole hog. We will eat potatoes.
Yeah.
You know, potatoes weren't brought over until after the Viking period.
Yeah.
From America. So I mean, we know.
Yeah.
But you know, you people would be grilling their meat on the fire, or they'll make a big stew in the big pots and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's all part of the culture of it all.
So let's go back to Peter Mikkelsen from the museum and find out if there's anything in this event beyond the obvious entertainment.
Is there anything that you can learn in the museum from this annual event?
Yes, there is. So not only do we try to emphasize more on experimental archaeology at the site. We had more than 25 archaeological students attending, working in experimental archaeology. We also give talks. This year, I think it was about social relation in Viking air warfare by one of our doctors who spoke to the Vikings, who wanted to listen to that. And he got really, really good reactions from these people. For instance, when he was talking about buried mass graves we have found from the Viking Age. There was one guy who said, well, when I was fighting at Falklands, all the privates was taken to one pit and all the officers were thrown home. I liked it. I like to have that kind of reaction from people who take this serious. And we had some really, really good feedback from the warriors. Now we have there were 400 warriors. I think we were about 900 Vikings in all. It's a huge camp, as you have seen.
Mm.
And we have more than 25,000 people attending it from the town going, just to come and see it. I think it also creates interest in the prehistoric times, which is important for our point of view. Because if no one thinks that it's interesting what happened at that time, no one will go to the museums in the end, and it will be just empty rooms. We have to make it relevant for people living today what happened at that time. There's one story I would like to add, because you ask about intercultural training and experiences and so on.
Mm.
One of the Australians who participated this year, one of the 11 Australians, I was talking to her in the inn when we were sitting there eating our dinner, And she was happy. She said she has never been as happy in her life. She was home. She was a Viking. She was home. And you know, her name was Fatma. She was black and a female. And she was a warrior. That is very, very interesting, I think, because it shows that this Viking identity is not something it's old solely belongs to us here in Scandinavia. It's transcending borders. You can feel yourself being a Viking even though you are black, comes from Arabic roots and live in Australia.
Playing with your identity is something which we've touched on in previous shows in different contexts, such as when you go on an internship. But that's it for today. I hope it wasn't too violent for you. The next show will be coming to you from Germany on October the 2nd, so stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.